This is the EWN Radio Network.
You've waited. You've wished. You've hoped. You've dreamed. Now it's time to act. Time to move toward the life you want to live. This is EWN Radio, and you're listening to Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust with your host, Leslie Green.
Hello, this is Leslie Green, and you're listening to Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust on EWN Radio. This week, we're discussing happiness, specifically speaking to the director, editor, and producer of Pursuing Happiness, a documentary about finding the happiest people in America. Now, as you know, Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust is a show that every week sets its sights on encouraging you to live your life to the fullest through accessing your love, specifically your self-love. Trust, understanding what it truly means to trust yourself first, making it almost irrelevant what others say or do. Trust begins within you first. And it's also a show about your pixie dust, your belief system. In today's show, I'd like you to look at your pixie dust. In other words, look at your beliefs around happiness. Make an observation and become aware of where the happiness needle falls in your life. Ask yourself, do I believe happiness is just a bunch of fluff? Is there anything I can sink my teeth into here? Ask yourself, am I a happy person? How did I even define that? Be open to see where today's conversation may lead your thinking. And as eager as I am to talk to the two gentlemen that we have on today, before we dive in, let's go ahead and set our intention. May we be open to receive whatever gifts await us during our time together. May we recognize them as such, give thanks, and breathe them in. And so it is. So here are some interesting facts I read on our guest's website. One of them is Americans spend upwards to $10 billion, that's with a B, $10 billion every year seeking happiness, which doesn't even include the money we spend on stuff we think might make us happy or the billions spent on antidepressants. So I found out here also that 1 in 10 Americans take antidepressants. And yet, for all the time and money we spend on pursuit, America consistently ranks low on the United Nations World Happiness Report. So today's guests ask the questions, what are we as a country doing wrong? What has led us to be so unhappy, and what can we do differently? Their answers are contained in the documentary Pursuing Happiness. Adam Schell and Nicholas Kraft went all around the United States interviewing some of America's happiest people. And how did they find these people? Well, I thought this was super cool. They just went up to everybody they knew and people they didn't know, complete strangers, and they asked hundreds of people, who's the happiest person you know? Then they proceeded to travel around the country solely based on those referrals, showing up at complete strangers' homes with their cameras rolling. I think I'd be mortified, but maybe if I were one of those happiest people, maybe I wouldn't be mortified, so maybe I'm not in that list. But today, we're speaking with the heartbeat behind the documentary Pursuing Happiness. We're speaking to Adam Schell and Nicholas Kraft. Welcome, Adam. Welcome, Nicholas.
Thank Hello. You. What a beautiful introduction. You did our job for us. Nothing left to say.
All right, bye. See you later. Hey, you feeling happy?
Week.
All right, check. So if all three of us are feeling happy, let's just go. Let's go get a happy meal. Well, isn't that part of it? There is we're in this culture. It's a kind of a happy meal culture, right?
It certainly is a word that gets used to sell essentially anything that a company wants to sell. It's a nice ambiguous word that means different things to different people, but certainly everyone wants to be happy. So you tack that on, and you've got a killer product.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. Adam, let's start with you. You are an award-winning documentary film director, editor, and a musician. You also co-wrote, directed, and edited Finding Kraftland, which I found really interesting to research that, so I hope we get a chance to talk about that a little bit too. That one won 19 awards, including Best Editor, woo-woo, go Adam, Best Documentary, Audience Award, and a Creative Spirit Award. So you are the director and editor for Pursuing Happiness. So I got to ask, why happiness? What made you even go there?
You know, it kind of goes back to two things. I mean, one is that happiness is this universal desire that we all have. It's kind of the ultimate desire. And in many ways, it ranks higher than everything else that we pursue and collect in our lives. I mean, everything is kind of geared towards that, right? We work hard so we can make a lot of money because we have this image that being rich makes us happy. You know, everything we do kind of points to happiness. And so it's kind of one of those subjects to me that is just extremely fascinating because of that. In addition, you know, you just see and hear a lot about people not being happy and being unhappy and all these remedies that we have in today's society, including antidepressant drugs and, you know, the self-help industry and all the stuff that we do to try and figure out why we're unhappy points to this fact that we're really unhappy. And then, you know, that coupled with the, you know, UN's happiness research and the report they put out every year rating the different countries around the world and where they rank in terms of happiness, and seeing that we rank far lower than I would have imagined or would have liked us to rank. And so it was really kind of this fascination I had and this belief that, you know, I don't think we're as unhappy as we think we are. I think that's just kind of this belief that we should be, everything should be perfect, and, you know, America's seen as kind of this utopia, and we have everything, and everything should be perfect. And so when everything's not 100% perfect, we kind of feel miserable, and we kind of are miserable. So
We're such overachievers in our culture. I'm listening to you thinking, we want to overachieve on happiness too. Damn it, we want to knock that one out of the park as well.
Exactly. It's like happiness doesn't, you know, it's not 1 through 10. It's like binary. It's 0 or 1. Are you happy? Yes or no.
And if you are, great. And if you're not, you're a loser. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
Exactly. And what's wrong with you? If you're not perfectly happy, if everything's not going perfect in your life, something's wrong with you. You know, and then we blame ourselves for that, and then it's like, "Oh no, something's wrong. I'm not happy today." It's like, yeah, well, today's a down day. Sometimes we have down days, sometimes we have up days. And, you know, and listen, I'm not saying that some people don't have clinical issues and brain chemistry things that are going on that cause them to be unhappy, which is a different subject altogether. I'm solely talking about assume everything else is normal and everything is constant. Okay, now let's approach this topic and look at it through all the different lenses that exist in that world.
Mm-hmm. I understand. And Nicholas, you're the producer of Pursuing Happiness. Now, I understand that there's a unique story of how this all came to be, you and Adam working together. So I was wondering if you could take us back, and this is going to take us back a little bit, to Finding Craftland, which is a different documentary, and share how that project, and I kind of have that in air quotes, because it was really, you know, it was a film, but the more I researched it, the more it looked like this amazing project. It was basically, it could have been the impetus for this current documentary of Pursuing Happiness. And I don't know if you know where I'm going with all this to connect the dots, but right. Are you following me on it?
Yeah, well, you know, Finding Craftland was it's the most overproduced home movie of all time. My father is a eccentric character and a very lovable man who's a big collector of pieces of Disneyland and pop culture stuff from the 60s and 70s, and it all lives in our home. And we wanted to do, you know, like a faux Cribs episode, like this 20-minute thing. Adam was an acquaintance who my dad had worked with to make some videos. And he said, yeah, will you help me make this? And then two things sort of happened. One, my dad is a more sort of guy. And so this 20-minute, you know, short piece grew into something bigger. And Adam was less concerned with the actual stuff. You know, he didn't care that there was a Dumbo from Disneyland hanging from our ceiling in the living room. Adam cared about is, well, why do you have this? You know, don't tell me what it is. What made you spend all this money? And so it grew into this really bizarre, heartwarming family, you know, family film, home movie. And so, yes, you are right. We ended up touring about 80 festivals, Adam, myself, my father, and there was a host in the film. All home movies need a host, a professional host, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience of touring with the film was very interesting because we thought this was a film that people would only like if they knew us. It's a home movie. But what we discovered is, without fail, there was always people who hung around afterwards to tell us essentially the same thing, which was, this film inspired me to get more joy out of my life, because my dad is a squeeze as much joy out of life as possible sort of guy. And for Adam, this is really his to say, but he's not talking, so I'll talk. For Adam, I think it was this moment of, huh, there could be a movie to be made that has many characters like Richard Kraft, although there is only one Richard Kraft, but lots
sounds
of people
like
who
it.
Are, yes, who are, you know, exceptionally happy. And what happens if we weave those stories together? You know, you will connect with different people because not everyone is my father or would necessarily connect. But, you know, if you create this tapestry of exceptionally happy people, there's probably something to be learned and something to be felt. And that was really, yes, the impetus of the film. And that was 10 years ago in March. So we're coming up on a decade after the fact.
Well, yeah, because before I knew the sequence of events there, and I was merely just reading up, and I was reading about Pursuing Happiness, the documentary, and I was reading about Finding Kraftland, I remember thinking, wow, Nicholas's father must be one happy man. I mean, anyone, basically, he's taking a quest with you around the United States, riding, what, hundreds of roller coasters, collecting thousands of toys, and basically transforming your house into some sort of a Disneyland shrine, hence the name Kraftland instead of Disneyland. I mean, brilliant here. And so I'm thinking, how much happy is running through that man's veins? But then I started thinking, how much happy is running through Adam's veins from being a part of this? And obviously you, as his son, being able to go on this quest with him and then have it all documented and then share it with all of us. I mean, it just seems like the happiness continued to multiply that started with one man and just multiplied out. Is that kind of, am I getting a sense for it?
I mean, you definitely are. I mean, and there's no doubt that the reason why Richard and I connected in the first place was because we were both happy people. And that was kind of the baseline of, you know, like, oh, you get it, I get it. It's like we're both kind of on the same page in that regard. So, but definitely, I mean, listen, hanging out with Richard, it's always going to be something fun and always something exciting. And that's one of the things that I loved is, and when he told me about this movie, I was like, oh my God, this sounds insane. But yeah, of course I'm on board.
But I have to, let me do a 180 on that. I'll be the first to admit that there are people who saw Finding Kraftland who are really turned off. Who's this glutton for joy who is, you know, so excessive? Not everyone connects with that. And what I love about Pursuing Happiness, and it was sort of our mission, was to weave, again, this tapestry of people. So you had a chance to see Pursuing Happiness the other day. It is not a Pollyannish film at all moments. There's tragedy. Yeah. There is very somber moments. There's very sort of reflective moments. And yes, there are those over-the-top, insanely happy, infectious people. But I think, you know, what we sort of discovered through making this film is we weren't making a film about happiness. We were making a film about life, you know, sort of prioritizing happiness. And sometimes life is not happy in the moment, but happy in the long run. And so that's really one of the reasons we wanted to ask other people, who's the happiest person you know? Because Ab and I might say, oh, it's, you know, these five people who are over the top excessively happy. Or if we ask someone in Austin, as we did, they said, oh, there's this wonderful woman who works at a food pantry at her church, and she's older, and you know, that's sort of where she gets her livelihood, and she's a real pillar of the community. And we got to spend time with her, and that was a whole different flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's important to be very clear on happiness and what it is and what it isn't. But maybe let's do that after commercial break. So we're with Adam Schell and Nicholas Kraft. We're going to head to commercial and we will be back in just a moment.
struggle with trusting in your life right now? Is there something that keeps creeping up in your business life or personal life that you're not sure why you're having such a difficult time letting go of it? Or maybe you've experienced something for the first time and it just doesn't feel quite right. Something you'd like to talk over with someone else who maybe isn't quite so close to the situation? If the message of trusting yourself and loving yourself resonates with you, but you feel you'd like a little more, why don't you visit pixiedustradio.com and set up some time to talk to Leslie one-on-one. Right now, she's offering 20-minute complimentary trust consultations to do just that, to dive deeper with you. Leslie would like to better understand what it is you may be struggling with and offer whatever wisdom and strategies she has gleaned over the years to apply directly to your specific situation. You'll be amazed at how much you can accomplish in just 20 minutes. And this goes without saying, but she wanted to make sure you know. Everything you discuss is completely confidential. Leslie's goal for everyone, her listeners, readers, even for herself, is to be able to inch closer to a true feeling of peace in our everyday lives. And because of that, she is happy and honored that you trust her enough to share a part of your life with her. For your complimentary 20-minute trust consultation, simply go to pixiedustradio.com to sign up. All one word, pixiedustradio.com. And now let's rejoin Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust with your host, Leslie Green.
Hello and welcome back. We're speaking with Adam Schell and Nicholas Kraft, director, editor, and producer of Pursuing Happiness, a documentary about finding the happiest people in America. Now, before we left for commercial, I started to kind of go into definition of happiness, because I think some people think that, you know, there's just this happy pill, or like Adam was talking about earlier, we just wake up and we're happy, and if so, yay, and if we're not, we're missing the mark at some point. So do either one of you have a definition of happiness?
You know, it's hard. I mean, happiness, one of the things that we learned is that happiness is so different for every one of us. I mean, we all experience life and experience things in a different way, and the things that make us happy are so different that it's hard to come up with a definition of happiness. I mean, you could, you know, say that, you know, the definition of happiness is, do you feel good? Do you feel, you know, happy? Do you feel, you can't use the word in the definition, but do you feel like you have energy? Do you feel like things are positive? Do you feel like you have a positive outlook on life? You know, but it's, in general, it's hard to define happiness in one specific set of terms because we are so different. And, you know, I do think that everybody has a different experience with it. What do you think?
Well, for me, you know, there's a section in the movie where we sort of talk specifically about this, and we break happiness into two pieces. There's hedonic happiness, which is sort of the feel good, have a great meal, you know, have a romantic encounter, your sports team wins, these things that sort of give you that jolt of energy. And then there's eudaimonic happiness, which is more long-term. Maybe you don't feel, you know, joyful or excited in the moment, but you have an overall sense of well-being. And I think the thing that is hard is, what is the balance of those two things? Can you have a life full of hedonic pleasure? I mean, packed full of it, and at the end of your life you look back and feel like, but I didn't have a lot of meaning? Or do you delay all hedonic pleasures for a eudaimonic sense of overall well-being, but you never are that really upbeat, excited sense of happiness? And so it's the balance. And I think what Adam is really saying is, well, that balance is different for everyone, and you know, you one need to define that for yourself. Although I would personally err more on the side of eudaimonic happiness with some, mm-hmm. you know, like a good meal. It's like, well, you need your proteins, you need your carbs, and you need your greens and your veggies. They don't always taste great, but at the end of every meal, you get a little dessert, and somewhere in there is a good balance.
Mm-hmm. I love that, because I love the yin and the yang of life, the whole balance. And I think that you're really onto something. One of the things that I found when I was looking into happiness, I guess about over a year ago when I was doing some research on it, is I love this definition by the ancient Greeks. And they say that the joy that happiness is the joy that we feel when we're striving for our potential. So is it that we're striving for our potential to connect with another during that romantic meal? Is it that we're striving for our potential as we connect when we're in that flow with ourselves, connecting with ourselves when we're in that truly happy place of creating something that's brilliant and beautiful that we want to share with the world or that we just want to savor and keep for ourselves? I mean, I think that there's a lot to that. And I wanted to just give you all some huge props here, because what I love most about what you guys have done is that you have presented the flip side of the coin. And that's why I love this movie so much, because every day I think we hear about all of the tragedies, and it's the media, the way that they present it to us. And I think oftentimes it's sensationalized. I think that these topics become what we talk about during our free time. So the coffee break at work, you know, dinner among friends. Maybe I even strike up a conversation with the person on the treadmill next to me in the gym, or they strike up a conversation with me about this horrible thing that's just happened in the news. And we get this sense that there's these sort of horrific stories that are happening out there, and we bring the out there in here. And what I mean by in here is into my own personal life. And I am not okay with that. I prefer for my in here to remain relatively free of tragedies. Now, I know that there are tragedies in the world that we face all the time, but all of these ones that have been sensationalized, I don't really want to bring those in here and then bring them into my home, bring them into my psyche, bring them into the cells of my body. That's not something that I'm interested in. So I was wondering with you all, was it difficult to present the flip side of the coin? Did you get any resistance? Were there any kind of issues in the filming of this?
Well, first of all, props to you that you could strike up a conversation on a treadmill. I'm usually so out of breath that I'm like, I hope no one asks me anything. I'm dying,
Nicholas,
over here.
Nicholas, I saw you. You look like you could run from Dallas to New York and back. Stop.
I could segue from Dallas to New York and back. I don't know that I could.
Actually, a lot of work.
A lot of leaning. You know, what's interesting about that is, yes, it is difficult to not get pulled into the negative. And I think one of the reasons is people are storytellers. It's so inherent to every culture. It's such an old form of communication, and any good story has drama. And certainly when creating the film, you know, this couldn't be 90 minutes of sugar and fluff and, you know, fluff. Fluff is the word. You needed to go to the lows, but we did not want to go, like you said, to the sensationalized tragedies. We wanted to present things that were real, but again, with the focus of, but you can come back from this, not, oh, you know, something bad happened to this person. It could happen to you. Stay tuned to find out, you know.
Yeah.
It was something bad can happen to you, but look, you can work back from it, or you can take this opportunity to choose to grow and choose to enrich your life and realign your focuses and your pursuits based on sort of this clarity that often comes in the face of tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, going back to your earlier question about why I wanted to make this film, this is kind of the heart of it. I mean, we live in a world of sensationalized tragedy. The 24-hour news cycle is all about telling us all the things in the world that we should be afraid of. And it works. We're afraid of a lot of things. And whether that's necessary to our survival or not, I'm not judging that, but what is not necessary is to live in that, like you said. Allowing that into your psyche, into your house every single day is not effective, and it doesn't create a happy, feel-good life. It creates a nervous, I'm anxious, I always am scared of something lifestyle. And so part of my wanting to make this film was wanting to show the other side of life. We have so much of that other stuff in the world and in our media and in our entertainment that I wanted to show that we are actually happy people. There is actually good stuff out there and people doing good things, and not in the kind of like end of the 24-hour news cycle, you know, show where it's like, let me show you the feel-good story of the day. A fireman rescues a kitten from a tree, and it's like, okay, that was nice, and good night. You know, it really, really live there and find out the depths of it and really explore that and share that and really capture that happiness. And like Nicholas said at the onset of this, I wanted, part of my concept was, I want to make a film that is just all like happiness. Like, you just feel good watching this movie all the way through. And, you know, there was a lot of stories of people going through tragic experiences and how they got through it, and now they're happy. And I was like, I just didn't want to go there. I was like, that's not what this is about. I want it to be about happiness. But one of the things I realized in this process is life is dynamic. You can't live in this world without experiencing tragedy. I don't care who you are, even if you're, you know, a prince born into, you know, riches and servants and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have some sort of tragedy in your life. I mean, it's all relative, right? I mean, maybe you didn't get the new Ferrari you wanted that week, and that's your tragedy, or, you know, who knows what it is. I haven't lived there. But we all experience tragedy to some degree, to some level, and we all have the greatest tragedy in our life. And the question is, how do you balance that experience with finding joy and happiness and getting back to that place of happiness? And so in the film, that's why we had to explore some great tragedies that people have experienced and hear their stories about how they survive and get through it and move on and still live fulfilling, happy, joyful lives.
Well, the other day when I met you all in person, and I was telling Nicholas this, that as I prepare for any show, I look for a quote that I feel will kind of serve as a lighthouse, somewhere that we can look to guide us to the truth of whatever topic it is that we're talking about. And I almost went with, for this show, I almost went with my favorite happiness quote. It's by Groucho Marx, so I'll just go ahead and share it with you. Groucho Marx said, "I, not events, have the power to make me happy or unhappy today. I choose which it shall be." And as true as that is, I felt like I needed something a little bit more substantive when I looked at your film, and I thought there's more to it than just that. And so for today's show, I wanted to go deeper. And it was while I was actually watching an excerpt from the film, because it didn't show up in the film that I viewed the other day in Dallas, but it was an excerpt that I found online. You interviewed a mother whose son had an inoperable brain tumor. And she shared a story about making a heart connection with a woman at the grocery store. There was really no big wow to that segment of her story. There was no big aha, yet there was. Because she said, it's hard for dark places to happen in connection with other people. Talk about that. As you went across the country, traveling over 6,000 miles, did you find that trend that when people truly connect with another, it's difficult for those dark places to exist?
Absolutely. And that's kind of one of the greatest parts of this experience for both of us, is that, you know, we rarely stayed in hotels while traveling 6,000 miles, 20 different states. We rarely stayed in hotels. People welcomed us into their homes and cooked for us and you know, kicked their children out of their beds and giving us places to sleep. And that was one of the best parts of this, is the community that just rallied around us. And that was, you know, it just filled us up and just made us feel so whole and welcome and fulfilled in that aspect. So, yeah, I mean, it's really, when you're in connection with other people, when you have a strong sense of good relationships, good community, you feel like you have a place. You know, you feel like you matter. You feel like somebody else cares about you. And that could be one person, that could be 20 people, that could be 100,000 people. It just, you can't feel like alone in the world. And loneliness is one of the chief sources of unhappiness, right? It's like when you're lonely, yeah, there's lonely is, you know, synonymous with unhappiness. You know, you don't see, I'm lonely, but I'm happy. That just doesn't make sense.
I have to share a great moment with you, which is, you know, Adam and I made this film together, and it was really just the two of us. We had two people come and help edit, and they were extremely helpful, but the majority of this was the two of us. And, you know, we would often joke, well, it's going to be a very short credit sequence, you know. It's going to be anything that was done is either Adam or Nicholas or both of us. And then it came time to make the credits, and we remembered, oh, we, you know, there's some people. Anyways, so we had our very first screening with friends and family, and we had never watched the movie before, so we're watching it for the first time with about 60 people. And the credit scroll was so long because everyone who donated to our Kickstarter, which is predominantly how we funded this film, we wanted to include in the credits because we could not have made this film without them. And, you know, we included all the names of everyone we interviewed and all the people who let us stay in their homes and the people who connected us with people. And what we thought was going to be, you know, 20 seconds of a movie by Adam Schell and Nicholas Graff, you know, that role title, you know, that is the title, was 3-4 minutes of all these names. And it was, of course, this project is about connection and community at its heart. And the very beginning of this project began with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people saying, here's some money to go make it, or here, come stay with me, or you should go interview my aunt when you're in Oklahoma. Whatever it was a project that we could not have done, the two of us, and we didn't do the two of us. We did with, you know, hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I'm glad that you brought that up, Nicholas, because when I stayed to the end of the movie and I was watching the credits roll, I myself was surprised at how many people were involved. And what struck me, what struck a chord with me, was looking at all of the names, and I got this overwhelmingly positive feeling rise up within me that thought, wow, that's how many lives that got to experience this happy experience, this joyful experience. It touched that many people on a very profound and deep level, and I just offered almost a thought of gratitude because now I get to then, as an extension of it, I get to experience that joy as well based on them getting to experience it first. So it's almost like creating a movie like this is a whole pay it forward campaign.
I love that. And, you know, for every one person in the film, there are unfortunately five people who we spent equal amounts of time with who just, you know, we didn't have time in the film to showcase them, and not because it was not great stuff, all of it was, but because, you know, when you have 400 people on camera and only 90 minutes to showcase it, and everyone informed the process, you know, just the lady who you quoted earlier is in the film, but that quote isn't necessarily about getting in the lightness with strangers, but that the process of editing, and it informed other characters who exemplified that, and, you know, after spending a year with all of these people, and all having all these experiences, Adam and I were changed. And the, you know, had we written the script for the film when we started, it would have looked very different. But we were able to talk with 400 plus experts, and you know, their expertise, we crafted a new narrative and a new outlook on the subject. And again, yes, it really was an act of it was a community act.
And what you said about pay it forward is absolutely the heart of it, because one of the coolest things that happened when we took our very first trip, which was, we had no idea what we were doing. We were like, we had this loose concept, and we're like, well, let's just get in the car and drive somewhere, spend a week, and see what we can find. One of the coolest things that happened out of that is we'd interview people, and then, like, the next day, we'd get an email from them thanking us for coming and interviewing them, that they'd whole time since we left, they've been having conversations about happiness and what it means and how it relates to their life, and it was just this eye-opener for them, and that was kind of the coolest part for us, was we were like, wow, we set out to make a film that would hopefully be a conversation starter for people and help people kind of open their minds to the topic and help analyze their own life, and we realized that just by the act of going on the road, meeting people, interviewing them, was already accomplishing that goal. And so that was, the pay it forward was started right as soon as the project began, which was really cool.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, and I kind of want to find out and figure out who were these people that you spoke to. But let's hold that for just a second. I'm Leslie Green. You're listening to Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. We will continue in just a moment with Adam Schell and Nicholas Kraft, director, editor, and producer of Pursuing Happiness.
You'd like to learn more? Do you learn better through story rather than step-by-step instructions? For some things, step-by-step instructions are a necessity. But when it comes to the softer skill things in life, things like learning to trust yourself and love yourself, the gentle nature and subtlety of a story can be a much better teacher. In Leslie's book, Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust, available in Amazon, she shares 50 true stories, all with loving yourself and trusting yourself as the main characters. You will also find chapters on letting go, finding your inner strength, the gift of surrender, and even an entire chapter dedicated to pixie dust. Yes, in case you're stumped, Leslie comes out and tells you what the pixie dust actually is and how you can apply its magic directly to your life. Not just another inspirational book full of feel-good stories. This book has teeth and will provide you with a practical approach on learning to love yourself and trust yourself, to find a place of inner peace. Take a spin for yourself. Read the first chapter completely free. Leslie's gift to you. Visit her blog, trustlifetoday.com, to receive a free copy of Chapter 1, You Are Not Alone. Or go directly to Amazon for your very own hard copy or ebook version of Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. Begin today to experience the magic within. And now, let's rejoin Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust with your host, Leslie Green.
Hello and welcome back. You can listen again and share this episode on Pursuing Happiness with Adam Schell and Nicholas Kraft on pixiedustradio.com. Now, the movie itself, the film, so you spoke to people who had been identified by others as the happiest people that they knew. I'm curious, who were these people? Did you see any trends? Were they mostly spiritual, academic? Who were these people?
That was one of the coolest things, actually, is that, you know, we had no concept of like, oh, we were looking for a specific type of person. We were literally looking for just happy people. And at the beginning of the project, I made a list of, you know, all the different types of people because I wanted to represent everybody that I possibly could in the country. You know, it's like every race, every lifestyle, every, you know, socioeconomic status, everything. For me, it was kind of this, you know, I don't want to stick to one type of person because I wanted the film to be as relatable as possible to as many people as possible. So we found happy people everywhere. It wasn't just one type of person. You know, there were people that were very religious and very spiritual, and then there were people who didn't believe in that stuff at all. And we're like, yeah, you know, the religion's not for me. You know, I don't partake in any of that, but still we're extremely happy people. So, I mean, that was one of the coolest parts to me is that we really were able to capture kind of a wide variety of people.
Well, and there were also, so those are the stories, what I would think of as you all referring to the heart of the movie, but there was also a lot of brain power involved there. There were tons of researchers involved in the film. You had professors from top universities like Yale and Harvard. You had MDs, PhDs in psychiatry, psychology, sociology. You had a historian, a Hindu monk. I mean, you went out and found tons of researchers. What was their role in the movie? Were they just there to add flavor, or what were you going for with them?
For us, we never wanted to make a film that was preachy or a how-to or a too scientific. There are great films to be made and that are made, but our opinion was always we are probably not going to uncover new information that is groundbreaking to the general public because most people know the things that will make them happy or have heard it before. Happiness is a choice. happiness is being selfless. Happiness is doing things for others. And what we wanted to do with the experts interwoven with sort of these everyday people is create these thing called aha moments that it's what we ended up calling them, which is we wanted to give people the technical information, but we wanted to attach that to something that really hit them in the heart and really resonated with them. That way, at the end of the film, you're remembering these people's stories, and hopefully, you know, our job as editors was we want to make sure you fall in love with every character. So you might have fallen in love with them because they made you laugh. You might have fallen in love with them because you were emotionally tied up in their story, and that you also connected their story with a piece of technical information, be it something new about how perhaps happiness is contagious, and that's explained in the film, or again, something you know, which is your expression is your experience. And another way I think of putting that is, again, it's a choice. And So their role was really to remind people of these concepts that float around that we hear a lot and attach them to something that struck a heart chord.
And secondly, to add to that, I mean, the point of having the experts was to give, you know, it's like we're on this journey looking for happy people to figure out what they know about happiness. And at simultaneously what's happening in the world right now, we're seeing this explosion of research and, you know, people researching and discovering all kinds of things about happiness that we never knew before. And so there's been a lot of films made that contain all that research and all that kind of stuff. And so we didn't want to remake that film. However, by going and finding people that are just living happy lives is great, and it's inspirational, and you connect with these characters and you know, all that kind of stuff. But having the experts in there to kind of say, okay, well, let me explain to you what's going on with John, you know, as he's talking about what makes him happy in his life, and he's sharing his life story with you and how he looks at the world, coupling that with some of the research really helped kind of ground what we'd found with the people and kind of bring to light, okay, there is actual factual information behind what's going on with John. So it's not just John's experience, but it's John's experience coupled with why that works. So it was really this kind of cool marriage between the two. And of course, we focused more on the stories of the happy people and just peppered in a lot of the factual information behind it.
And lastly, you know, this was a journey that we set out on, and it was a journey partially to gain knowledge. And, you know, anything that is included in the film from these experts is stuff that informed us and we learned. And, you know, it was again, if we had written a script at the beginning of this project when we first had the idea, it would be filled with only, you know, a handful of things, many of which probably didn't even make the film, because what we learned, you know, you can imagine the stuff that didn't end up in the film because of time, but it informed the process. And so, you know, we spend 2 hours with Michael Norton at Harvard University, who's one of the leading researchers on the relationship between money and happiness. And suddenly that two-hour conversation we had is informing a lot of our interviews with other people. And then when we're looking at the footage, it is we're pulling things out because of what Michael Norton taught us. And so it's, they're instrumental in. And we, again, for the audience, too, we hope that they'll sort of make them think about stuff and almost prime you to learn something from one of the, you know, everyday people who are not these scholars or experts.
Well, I think that you all did a brilliant job of the balancing of the two. So you had the academia, you had scientific experts, and then balanced that with real world stories and examples. And Adam, the way that you said that you were focusing more on the heart stories and peppering in, I like the way that you used the word peppering, because that's what it felt like. There was a sprinkling in of the other. You put it all together and you have a recipe for a really wonderful film that I walked away feeling. I felt smarter because I knew more about, you know, what some of the experts were presenting that I was able to absorb. But I also just felt lighter, but in a way more grounded, if that makes sense. So lighter but more grounded. Like there is hope. that it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. And so one thing I wanted to ask you, and I hope this isn't a stumper sort of a question, but Nicholas had mentioned kind of the aha moments, and this film has been called an 83-minute journey full of ahas. So, Adam, can you share with us one of your ahas? I know I'm putting you on the spot so Nicholas gets to think about it, because you're next, Nicholas. Adam, any ahas for you?
You know, the experience of making this film is chock full of ahas constantly. You know, it's just like, oh, wow, I never looked at it that way, or I never looked at it that way. And the result, what you see on the screen, is really kind of, in a way, you know, as the filmmakers, it's all of our ha-has kind of put together in one film. So if you watch the film, that is kind of like the culmination of all of our aha moments. But picking one out specifically, and the one that I just, you know, I constantly carry with me, is something that we interviewed a life coach, Gary, and he says, you know, we're standing there on the beach with him. We went up and met him in Santa Barbara one day. He was like, come up to Santa Barbara and we'll just take a walk along the beach. And of course, as a DP and a filmmaker, I was like, oh my God, that's set up for a horrible interview with all the noise and waves and light issues and all that kind of stuff. But it actually turned out wonderful. But one of the things he says is, you know, life is your experience. You know, it's not, you know, I always, you know, there's this common notion out there that what you give is what you get. And that's kind of, when he said that to me, that was my response. I'm like, oh, like what you give is what you get. And he said, no, it's what you give is your experience. So if you're putting stuff out there, you experience it as you put it out there. And that is your experience of life. It's not waiting for something to come back to you to have the experience of it returning. It's the experience of putting it out there. And I constantly take that with me everywhere. I'm like, yeah, that is so right. Because, you know, I have two young kids. They're 3 and 5. And anybody who has young kids knows the challenges of raising children and, you know, the stress that puts on individuals and marriage and everything. But, you know, I constantly think about that when I'm dealing with my kids and they're stressing me out for one reason or another. They're running around naked, not putting their clothes on when we're trying to get out of the house and we're already late. And I have this moment where I say to myself, okay, I can either start yelling at them to get dressed and move, or I can kind of come down to their level and enjoy the game. Because for them, it's a game. And so every time I do that and I catch myself and I say, enjoy the game, it happens so much faster. We're able to actually turn the game into the game of getting dressed and getting out the door rather than, you know, me yelling at them, well, hurry up, we're late, we're late, we're late, we're late, we're late. And listen, I don't always do it. I'm not perfect. But it is always so much more fun for me and for them when I just sit back and I say, enjoy the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say that my aha was the same as the one that you just shared, Adam, and it was what I'm calling to myself the Gary effect. When he said those words on the beach, I think my jaw may have dropped a little bit. And Nicholas, I want to hear your aha too, but I don't want to miss this opportunity, because I want to ask you guys, as being in the film industry, I'm guessing, have you both seen Nicolas Cage in Adaptation?
Yes, of course. I watched it just the other week, actually.
Okay, well, I haven't watched it in years, so help me if I get it wrong. But there is a point where Nicolas Cage is talking to himself as his twin. So Nicolas plays, you know, himself and his twin.
Donald, yeah.
Yes, and the one more conservative one says, you know, I watched you one time and he kind of had made a fool out of himself because he was so in love with this girl and she didn't reciprocate his love, that what she had done was actually done something to make fun of him behind his back. And the one twin was just so like, I'm glad that you didn't see that. And then the more heartfelt twin was more like, no, I saw what she had done. And he said, well, you know, why didn't that bother you? Why didn't that embarrass you? And the one twin was like, you know, because I loved her. That was him giving of himself. That was his own thing that he owned. She didn't really even have anything to do with the love that he felt for her. He got so much joy and pleasure and fulfillment out of his love for her. It was irrelevant whether she reciprocated or not. Did I capture that right after all these years?
I just love that we're quoting Nicolas Cage. That's great. I love that. But yes, that's exactly what it is. The point is, yes, my experience was putting love out there, and I did this crazy, kooky act, and I had a good time doing it, and it almost didn't, you know, matter how she took it, because my experience was my expression, and my expression was my experience.
Exactly, exactly. And maybe that's why I like in the intro of this show, maybe that's why I weave it in there into almost all of the intros to this show, is when we truly learn to trust ourselves first, it is irrelevant what another person says or does, because they're not saying or doing anything to us. We're already owning that trust aspect. We're putting it out there. And so they're very similar there. And so I'm glad that we went there. And it also gave you longer to think, Nicolas, although I'm guessing you probably don't need more time. So yay, Nicolas Cage for that. Love that in adaptation. So now it's Nicolas Kraft. What was your big aha?
The big aha for me is, you know, it's something that's kind of a culmination of a lot of things in the film, but it's that all information is ambiguous information. We ended up sitting down with the chair of philosophy at Yale, Tamar Gendler, and she, you know, talked about this a lot, how we code information and we do it very quickly, but almost everything that the world tells you is ambiguous and you assign meaning. And I think of someone like Gloria, who's one of our main characters and is sort of woven throughout the film. And this is a very bright, driven young girl who had a very promising law career, was planning on being the mayor of Los Angeles, and then at 28 years old was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And I'm sure anyone listening thinks, well, that's some of the worst news you can get. And right away, we're making this judgment that that news inherently is bad news. But Gloria, however she did it, said, that's great news. I'm going to use this to change my life in a positive way. And what's interesting is she actually led a very wonderful and blessed life and was very happy, but she made some key changes and really lived life in a very different way that I think a lot of us would recognize as a much happier life, a much more fulfilling life. And it's like, how is stage 4 colon cancer, that diagnosis, how is that good information? Everyone would say that's inherently bad information. But the aha moment to me was saying, oh, no, it's not. We've just, as a society, and rightfully so, you know, assume that that is bad information. But we have the power to assign meaning however we choose.
Well, in listening to you talk about Gloria, something really struck me that I hadn't thought of before, because in all of the happiness research that I've done in positive psychology, there's always this link between happiness and someone's purpose. The people who have the purpose in life, who aren't just floundering around, those tend to be happier than those people who don't have a purpose. And so I think when I'm thinking about Gloria or anybody who gets a cancer diagnosis or a life-threatening diagnosis like that, it stops the floundering. You could have just been dorking around, doing whatever you were doing, thinking, I've got tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, it's like a whip is cracked, and it's like, bam, everything is into perspective. And you may have had a loose purpose before, but now it's the, I'm going to live each day to the fullest. I'm going to think about what I'm grateful for. I'm going to express it to myself or acknowledge it to myself and then express it to another person. All of those sorts of things. And so, so that's what we're talking about here, I think, is happiness and purpose. And that's at least was my experience, and I think it definitely seems like Gloria's experience as well.
Well, the philosopher William James has this great metaphor that I think describes Gloria really beautifully, which is that if all of your beliefs about the world and the way you operate are sort of these metal shards sort of strewn about on a table— when something major happens, oftentimes a tragedy, not always, sometimes it could be the birth of a child, but when something major in your life happens, it's like someone just takes this magnetic rod and just throws it down in the middle of the table, and suddenly everything aligns and makes sense. And you know, Gloria, I think, had a very clear purpose before her diagnosis. But regardless, when this thing happened, everything just, there's this moment of clarity. And the question is, can you have that moment of clarity without tragedy or without a huge change? It doesn't have to be tragic. Again, it could be suddenly you've moved, or suddenly you have a child or a spouse, something that really realigns your purpose. And I think the answer is yes, but it oftentimes takes more work if you're just creating that for yourself, if the universe does not provide for you a change agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the change agent is so critical there. That's the thing that provides the impetus for us to wake up, because I think so often, especially in our culture, we go into these habits, and it's easier just to get up and do what I do every day and not be mindful about what I'm doing, because, you know, I can just float on autopilot until that change agent happens and it wakes me up, and then autopilot is still an option. It's just not a very attractive option anymore.
Well, and our goal with the film was to be, hopefully a change agent to some, maybe a small one, maybe a large one, but you know, again, by showcasing these people who have had major change agents, either because the universe provided them or they created them for themselves, like the gentleman in Detroit, who we could talk mm-hmm. about if you'd like, you see this movie, and hopefully, again, those aha moments are those change agents where I am going to do something differently in my life, and I'm going to use Gloria, I'm going to use John, I'm going to use the Sit On It Detroit guys as inspiration and as my change agents.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. and sometimes it is necessary to create that change agent for yourself. And like Nicholas pointed out, the guys in Detroit did that. They said, we're not going to wait around anymore. We're going to do it ourselves. And that's, you know, sometimes important is sometimes realizing, okay, I'm in that rut. I'm going on autopilot. I'm just, you know, not feeling like anything's happening. Sometimes you got to just shake things up and say, you know what? Whatever it is, you know, I'm going to move. I'm going to go get a new place to live, or I'm going to move cities, or I'm going to, who knows what it is for each person, but sometimes you got to just make it happen.
We have talked about so many incredible things, and if you saw the list of questions that I still have yet to get to, we may have to have a part two after your movie is out there and people can get it in their hot little hands. Do we have any information around that yet, when people will be able to view Pursuing Happiness, or do I need to do an update on that later?
A specific date we don't have, but it looks like it's going to be released somewhere in October or November this year. We're hoping for a somewhat of a theatrical release, probably, maybe a couple cities, who knows. At this point, we're still working out those details. But definitely check our website regularly, which is pursuinghappiness.com. We have all kinds of stuff up there, like you read, and we have a whole bunch of videos that support the film, and a trailer's coming very soon. So definitely check that out, and all the information about release and where it'll be viewable in the coming months will be available on there as well.
And you can sign up, you know, there's a very quick button for sign up for the alerts, and we have yet to send out anything that is not incredibly urgent, and so probably the next alert will be it's available either in your city or on video on demand. So please sign up for that if it's something that interests you.
And I'll make sure that I'm doing any and everything to get the word out as well.
Thank you.
So let's remember our quote from the woman in your movie. It's hard for dark places to happen in connection with other people. And I really want you to stop and feel the truth in that, because your practice until we meet again next Wednesday purposely puts yourself in the position to make one true connection per day with someone else. Observe how dark places cannot exist in the space, and feel your happiness muscle grow each time you're in your practice. Until then, you can listen to this show again and send it to a friend on pixiedustradio.com. I'd love to thank you, Adam and Nicholas, for being on.
Thank you so much. This was a blast, and it was great to meet you the other day. What a serendipitous event.
Yeah.
That's a totally different story. Yes, indeed. I look forward to connecting with you all again. We'll be back here at pixiedustradio.com next Wednesday at noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central. Until then, my prayer for you is this. May you lead your life by love, and live your life with trust. Let go and believe. A greater outcome is already yours. Amen.
Thank you for joining us today on Love, Trust, and Pixie Dust. We hope you enjoyed the show. Would you like to find out more about what it means to love yourself and trust yourself? Well, don't wait until next
week.
Please
just tell me that
go
I didn't cut out anymore.
TrustLifeToday.com, where Leslie has been sharing about love and trust since January of 2011, which is a long time.
Shoot,
in the blogging world. Long enough to build up a hefty supply of resources.